Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to Best Show Best, the best of the best show. And you can find out more about the best show over at thebestshow.net. It airs live every Tuesday night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Standard Time. And if you're new to the program, this show, these are little bite-sized bits and greatest hits type samples of what we do every week. So if you like this, maybe you check out the full show. And if you want to support The Best Show, we have a Patreon set up over at patreon.com/thebestshow. That is how you support the program. It is listener-sponsored now, and you give what you can, and we appreciate it. And there are prizes and benefits at all different levels of giving. So, again, go to patreon.com/thebestshow and support the show. And now, please, without further ado, check out this episode of Best Show Best. The next thing we have coming up, very exciting, I guess it's a night of comedy. Guess we can say that. Because the next guest I have coming up on the show, Todd Barry, will be up later. But is a guy who everybody's going to know who this is. This is a little bit of a thrill, a little bit of a surprise. You'd really just have to be under a rock if you don't know who this next guy is. He was one of the top comedians of the 2000s. He was a huge breakout star on SNL. He was a star of a bunch of movies, Hooker by Crook, Walk of Shame, Laundry Day. And he co-created a really beloved and influential show, short-lived show, but definitely influential, called Dougie Town. I'm sure everybody knows who this is now. And he also has a book out documenting one of what I guess you'd call one of the most spectacular flameouts in recent memory. And he's got a new book and a new television series. So it's exciting to welcome to the show, Dougie Miller. Do we have Dougie on the line?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good, Dougie. Thanks for coming.
Oh, of course. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, I have to come clean. I'd actually never heard of your show before, but I called my good friends, Sal Vulcano and Bill Hader to see if you were on the up and up, and they both vouched for you 100%.
So, that's cool. Well, absolutely. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I actually checked out the show and I do really like it.
Oh, thank you.
You are a very funny guy. I have to say, I don't quite get when the guy who sounds like a lady from the Amish country calls in and then you suddenly become like 100 times more gullible, but the other stuff I'm very into.
Okay, cool.
And it's a real pleasure to be here on the great show.
Mm-hmm. The best show.
Excuse me?
It's the best show, actually.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. I think Julie had written that down wrong for me. I'll tell you, I'd love to get into it with you about favorite and maybe not so favorite candy bars. I think we'd have a good bit of overlap.
Well, you know, that's, I guess, it's like not exactly what we're doing. I mean, well, like, what was the what's your favorite candy bar?
I like, this is probably not going to be overlap. I love Zagnut.
Yeah, that's not one of my, favorites or least favorite.
Most people don't even consider it a candy bar, really.
I guess people forget that it is candy.
Kind of like what's the white one? Zero Bar.
Yeah, I guess those are the forgotten candy bars.
What's your favorite?
The favorite candy bar, probably Payday.
like they did. See, I would put that under the umbrella that we just spoke of. No chocolate in any of those candy bars.
Yeah, no, it's nuts and sugar.
Who was in that movie? That was my good friend Jackie Earle Haley.
Was in Nuts and Sugar.
He was in Nuts and Sugar, and he
played Nuts.
Oh my God, I can't believe I'm forgetting this because I was a co-producer on this movie. Who was the love interest? Why am I spacing on this? Oh my God, I can picture her.
Yeah. No idea. I have no
She's
idea.
She's one of those triple namers.
Yeah, it's this one. This one's not sticking up.
Can't get it.
Yeah,
maybe we'll come up with it later.
I'm not going to look. I hate when you can Google things and just get the answer so quickly. I'm going to see if either of us can come up with this.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's cheating. I don't like it either.
Yeah. So, you know, Dougie, I guess. Where do I even begin with your story? You know, you've had a really one of the wildest rides in comedy history, like so many ups and just as many downs.
I know, man, you're telling me, you know, I feel like I'm on my 10th life, you know, to use a Peter Criss-ism. And, you know, Peter's a great friend, of course. He's a, very gentle soul. Never quick to lash out in anger, just an all-around, even-keeled, smooth sailing guy.
It's always seemed that way. Seemed that way. Very, very balanced and not operating from a position of pettiness or insecurity.
No. Very grateful. Grateful for, you know, where he was and where he continues to be in life.
Yeah, just one of those guys who appreciates the ride.
Yep.
You know. Well, I gotta say, you know, we're definitely honored to have you here on the show, and it's great that you're making this comeback, and you've actually got an autobiography coming out next Tuesday, which is called Coming Clean, and I had a chance to read it, an advanced copy, and I can say it is a fantastic book.
Well, thank you, Tim. You know, I'll tell you, it almost killed me to write this thing, you know, yeah, there's a lot of laughs in it, but there's just as many dark moments, and to be quite frank, those are moments I really did not want to relive. But, you know, in order to heal and to help heal my relationships with others, you know, I had to put those on paper.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, we certainly will touch on some of the darker moments, but
yeah.
I guess I would want to just kind of honor the high points for starters. You know, you're one of the, in comedy, you're like a legitimate triple threat is, I guess, what you'd be called. And there are not many of those in comedy. You, successful stand up back in the late 90s. And then you were a huge movie star, the beginning of the 2000s. And then you were the creator and star of your own television show after that, which, that's a lot of ground to cover. And, I guess I'd really love to hear, you walk us through like that heyday, maybe if you could in your own words.
Look, you know, I don't want to give away too much of this. You know, I'm trying to sell this damn book, Sean.
It's Tom.
Oh, sorry, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm going to write that down.
Uh-huh. T.
T-H.
No, A-T-O. M.
A-T-O.
No, T-O-M.
That was almost turning into that Jerry Lewis thing where the guy calls up and trying to get him to honor his friend at that night's MS banquet. Remember that? It's like a prank tape. It was on the Celebrities at Their Worst.
Uh-huh.
It's a great one, yeah.
And he
just keeps pretending to spell the name wrong as the guy's trying to get him to write the name down.
Okay, yeah, I'll check that out.
You're not going to check it out.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know you're trying to sell a book, but I think that you giving a little bit of insight into this would probably help sell some copies.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. Okay, well, let me nutshell it for you, okay? Going all the way back, I grew up in a town called Tylersport, Pennsylvania, which is, of course, where the Junior Little League World Series takes place every year, and which was ironic because my parents were strict Christian rocket scientists, so I was never allowed to participate in any team sports, really.
Uh-huh. Christian rocket scientists?
Yes, yeah.
What is that?
Well, it's the same as regular Christian science, but it's geared more towards space travel enthusiasts.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that.
It's not huge. It's a real subset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So basically, because I was part of that world, I never really felt part of the world that my fellow kids and eventually teenagers inhabited, and that's when I started to really get into comedy. So at around 17, I started cutting school, and I would go up. I'd go to Manhattan, and I would check out comedy clubs, and eventually I started doing open mics. You know, and after a couple years, I started to get better. You know, you find your groove, and you find who you are as a comic and what works and what doesn't, what's natural. And eventually I was able to get some decent spots. You know, I was emceeing, I was middling, and then eventually I was headlining. And, I mean, it's pretty much the same story at any comic experiences. You know, listen to or watch any of the literally thousands of podcasts, movies, and TV shows about stand-up comedy that have been made in the last 5 years, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm pretty sure my new show, Second Chances, is the only new series in this new spring lineup that's not about the sad yet ultimately hilarious and very important life of a stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about that later.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we can get into the new show, Second Chances, later in the journey, I guess you'd call it. But so when you're kind of getting started there and you're getting your career rolling, then you audition for and get SNL.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story. I didn't even know Lorne was in the audience the night that he saw me. And out of the blue, I get a call a couple of days later to audition later that next week. And I'll tell you, I had no characters at all. I didn't do characters. So basically, I just started making up stuff on the spot. And he loved it. He flipped.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And some of those characters that you did once you got the show that mm-hmm. became really huge.
Big stuff, yeah.
Like Horseface DeMartini, everybody. It's like a, you know, Punk Pope John Sid the First, the surgeon with OCD. Then there was prematurely balding Jesus, was a little one. It was an edgier one, but
it was it was great. And I'll tell you, they were so much fun to do, Rick.
Mm-hmm. Tom.
Tom, sorry, I gotta write it on every little scrap of paper I have here because it's not sticking with me.
Okay, it's
that name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So doing the show was fun.
I loved it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But you were there for just 3 seasons.
That's true.
Because then you kind of got some big offers that I guess were too good to refuse.
You know, it's a cliche, but. Hollywood did come calling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And everybody knows your film debut, Hooker by Crook. It's a huge smash right out of the box.
It was. And I'll tell you, when I first read Andy Blitz's script, I thought, look, nobody's going to buy me playing a Cleveland cop named John Crook who has to go undercover as a female prostitute to break up a Peruvian coke smuggling ring. But it worked. It was magic on the set between Adam McKay and I, and we took it to new places that I don't think anyone thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it certainly went to those places. It was, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the number one comedy of 2004.
It was, yes. Yes, according to Variety magazine.
That is the showbiz Variety, the showbiz authority.
It's a great one, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, everything was firing on all cylinders at that point. And I even had a top 20 single with I'm My Own Pimp, which was, of course, the song that was played during the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. And Frederick Durst, of course, was the producer of that. Another cool guy and a really great friend.
Seems, I don't know him, seems like a guy who would be so cool.
Yep.
So chill. No anger right under the surface.
Yep. Very generous. He would, see, he and I had this kind of joke gift thing we would do. The gifts weren't jokes. We would, every day, we would send each other a new backwards baseball cap.
Mm-hmm.
The tighter the better.
Sure.
Tight lids.
Yeah. They were tight lids?
Very tight lids, yeah. Hey, you know, speaking of music, mm-hmm. maybe you can help me with this. I did an interview the other day over at Sirius.
Yeah.
With this guy. It was like a music interview show. I cannot remember his name. And I'll tell you, it's the only interview I've ever done where the interviewer talked about his own fame. Mm-hmm. It's like every other word was blank is a friend of mine, you know, that sort of thing. Very name-droppy. And I actually started to keep a running tally. I counted 7 blank is a good friend of mine's, 5 blank texted me's, and 12 mentions of something called John 5. What is that?
John 5?
Yes. It sounds like a Bible verse.
John 5 is, it's not a Bible verse, Dougie. John 5 is actually an American guitarist. His stage name was bestowed on him in 1998 when he left David Lee Roth and joined the industrial metal group Marilyn Manson as their guitarist, taking over for Zim Zum. Still going by the name John 5, he has since become the guitarist for Rob Zombie.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
My big question to you is, at what point did you have the time to pull that up on Wikipedia?
Oh, no, that's just off the top of my head.
No, it's not.
Sure.
You're kidding me.
No, that's just, I memorized dumb facts.
What else have you memorized?
The thing is with me, Dougie, is that I can't hold on to a lot of them simultaneously. So once that one goes, another one will slide into its place.
I see. They call that a cranial info replacement, I believe.
Yes.
I think that's the technical term for it.
I'm not sure what that is because I would have known, but it got slid out of the way for this John 5 info.
Yeah. Oh, this guy also was talking about Foreigner. That's all he could talk about was how Foreigner has, like, no original members sometimes, and why aren't they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And they started yelling about it. I was like, I don't even remember Foreigner.
Yeah, he's I don't exactly know who you're talking about, but he, I know whom you're speaking.
Okay, well, maybe this could help you out. He was wearing 2 UFO shirts.
Oh, his name is on the tip of my tongue.
Okay, we can come back to that one also.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit later.
Let's see if we can get it again. No Googling.
Nope.
No Googling. So
like Gary Shandling.
When he would just, that would be if they were updating that. Maybe when they reboot Larry Sanders, he'll say.
Oh, I hope I get it.
And anyway, no Googling. Like that's
no Googling.
And just remember, no Googling.
Sound just like him.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, Dougie, back then, 2004 to like 2007,
yeah,
you were just like on fire, and you were on all the magazine covers, you were on all the talk shows. Huge.
I tell you, it's like every entertainer's fantasy, and it was more success than I ever dreamed of. You know, I was on fire. Basically, everyone wanted to know me, men, women, cool people, uncool people, people who were just kind of cool. You know, I'd go to Home Depot to buy some light bulbs, and I'd end up, quite honestly, getting down with some hottie in one of the aisles. Oh. You know, it certainly gives new meaning to the saying, getting wood, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay, well, that's...
Get
sure.
it, like, you would go no, to Home Depot to buy, like, yeah. I don't know, like a, you know, plywood or something.
Yeah, no. I
your wick dipped.
Yeah, I was hanging with you right from the outset on that one, Doug.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I was with you right from the beginning.
It's a Tom Petty song, right?
What's that?
I was with you right there from the beginning. It's on
Full Moon Fever.
It is on Full Moon Fever. It's, it's the third song.
It was the B-side of Zombie Zoo.
Which should have been a hit.
I can't believe it was. It's his best song.
It is, yeah.
Because it's one of those songs, again, where a guy takes on, like, a crazy scene that he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Which, who can't get enough of that?
I love it.
After Hooker by Crook, you had a couple movies were also big hits. Online Hating.
Yep.
And Walk of Shame.
Yes, and I'll tell you, man, more great times making those. You know, that such great fun. It was, you know, you hear those stories about them making Caddyshack and Stripes and then just the blast that they had making those. And it was very similar. But I'll tell you, that kind of massive success can really mess with your head, though.
Really?
Yeah, and I was finding, basically, I was able to get away with pretty much anything I wanted to get away with just because I was famous and very rich. And the odd rub of that is I didn't have to pay for anything at that point. You know, people were buying me dinners, clothes, drinks. Everything was comped. And I'll tell you, if I was pulled over for speeding by a cop, 100% of the time the cop would end up asking me for either an autograph or a photo or to call his wife to talk to her. And I'll tell you, sometimes they'd even let me shoot their guns.
The cops would let you shoot their guns?
They would, yeah, and sometimes at them.
And sometimes what?
At them.
The cops would let you shoot the guns at them?
Yes, yeah, they'd say, I would be such an honor for you to shoot me.
Well, that's very strange.
It's crazy. I did it. Look, I didn't take advantage of it. I did it like 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well.
Yeah. Dougie, I guess you know, I don't have to tell you your story. It's like, you kind of had things went a little south after that run. And,
yeah.
Things took a real turn for the worse during the filming of your next movie.
Yeah, it was all catching up to me at that point. I was burning the candle at both ends for sure. Hell, I was setting the entire shopping center in which the candle store was housed on fire with a high-powered, fully automatic blowtorch.
Uh-huh.
Granted, that was a very unwieldy way of saying that, but I stand by it.
Yeah, and that looked great on the page when you
right?
said that. I thought that was very literary.
Yeah, thank you.
It showed a real feel for just the printed page.
Yeah. It's funny, I have to say it every day in these interviews, and that was the first time I ever really got it right all the way through.
Hmm.
I usually leave out the in which part.
Well, I like the full version of it.
Thank you. Yes, it's got mad flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so the movie ended up suffering greatly because of my state of mind and also my flagrantly immoral proclivities.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I guess I have to say, it's been like 10 years since that movie.
Right.
And I'm a little embarrassed to say I'm still not exactly sure how to say the name of the movie.
Right. It's Gymspionage.
Gymspionage.
Yeah. I know. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
No.
But I'll tell you, at the time, a movie about a bumbling gym rat who gets recruited by the KGB to become the president's personal trainer seemed like a funny idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the scheme of things, it is a decent premise for a movie.
Yeah, I mean, you're combining gym culture, you know, and espionage.
Yeah.
Yeah. But by that point, my ego was so out of control.
Mm-hmm.
That I demanded that John Milius write it.
Mm-hmm. Who is a very kind of macho guy. He wrote Apocalypse Now and Red Dawn and Dirty Harry and like Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
So
very macho.
Yeah.
So basically what started out as a goofy farce ended up as this like dark, very political, often violent cross between, I don't know, the errand boy and the Manchurian candidate, but with howitzers.
I have to say it's a very confusing movie.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you don't sleep for 17 days straight and you're only eating good and plenties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that how you were getting through?
Oh, and a lot of cocaine too.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. You mentioned the good and plenties first.
I did. Yeah. But speaking of rails, you know that story where Scorsese has to remove the coke rock from Neil Young's nose in the Last Waltz?
Yeah.
Well, they had to remove a coke-encrusted, rolled-up $1,000 bill from right behind my ear in 70% of the shots for that movie.
Wow.
Fully visible.
Crazy.
Cost a fortune to take it out.
I'm sure. Yeah. Can I ask why the director, who was Peyton Reed,
yep.
Why didn't he just tell you to remove the coke-encrusted $1,000 bill before shooting?
Well, how could he? You know, I was so famous at that point. I was pretty much the most famous, successful, proven comedian at that point, you know, especially in film. So, you know, he knew that I'd have him fired and replaced it in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, so he wasn't going to say anything. I'll tell you, man, I was so mean to him. Oh, my God.
How so?
There was one time I made him eat a whole canister of film. Like, he actually had to sit down at a table with utensils and eat it in front of me. Basically, it was punishment because he made me leave my trailer to do a scene when I was right in the middle of talking to a friend in my trailer. I don't know if you can hear the air quotes I'm using.
Around talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. So I'm assuming, yeah. Okay. No reason to go into that in any more detail.
Well, hey, what can I say? I'm living proof of that old showbiz axiom that famous, very successful men have a deep, deep passion for having sex with women who aren't their wives. Is that a crime?
I didn't realize that was just a showbiz axiom.
Yeah.
That's how that gets addressed.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How they get undressed, what?
Okay, well.
All right.
Look, I guess it's nice to hear a little bit of the Dougie,
I gotta keep some of that alive, right? But that behavior is in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you had a hard time with Peyton Reed.
I did, and you know, I would call him paid less instead of Peyton, because I was making so much more money than him.
Uh-huh.
It was great. And I also had this new car that he got. He got this really nice, very expensive, top-of-the-line BMW.
Yeah.
And he had it delivered to the set, and I had his BMW swapped out for the stunt car that got blown up in the final scene.
Okay.
It was hilarious.
And so that you blew his brand-new car up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then there was one time I had his trailer filled with gallons and gallons of fetid rice pudding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and I gotta say, your book, Dougie, is filled with all sorts of stories like that. Which I guess the only way the only word that like comes to mind for the stories is unsettling.
Well, yeah, and imagine how unsettling it was to have to look back on this. That was the hardest part of writing this book. You know, I had to come to terms with these terrible things that I did and things that I said to people who were very close to me, working partners, directors, as I said, you know, lovers, wives, ex-wives. You know, it was very, very shameful behavior.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what takes you to your downfall next.
Yeah. Oh gosh, by 2008, I was fully out of control. Jim Spionage tanked. Dougie Town, while it was a critical favorite and very influential, didn't connect with a wide audience, and I was getting very, very angry. I was seeing this whole new crop of young comics passing me by, and I wasn't getting the roles that I wanted and that I thought I should have. Adam McKay wouldn't hire me to play opposite Will Ferrell in Step Brothers only because I broke into his house one night and stole his refrigerator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
And,
not
and,
a
that. Yeah, he really held a grudge on that one. And so, you know, I felt terrible. I felt bad about myself. So what do? I just kept doing things to make me feel better, which, of course, was illicit substances.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll tell you, man, I did pretty much anything you can imagine. I was doing, oh my God, was I on rainbow defibrillator, massive doses of orange typewriter, Iraqi pancakes, flannel meat thermometer, Hilly Crystal meth, Dad's terrible blues band, all that stuff.
Wow, those are some. Those are heavy duty
it
drugs.
It is heavy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes as a cocktail, I would mix all of them.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it really wreaked havoc on my mind real bad. I was having severe paranoia. I developed really bad tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was terrified of my own tendons.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. Wait, what was that?
I was terrified of my own tendons?
Yeah, I don't know if that's what tendonitis is, that you're scared of your own tendons.
Yeah, I was afraid they were going to, like, I wake up in the middle of the night, my tendons would be wrapped around my throat.
Yeah, that's not exactly tendonitis, but I understand the general gist of what you were dealing with.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I could be thinking of night terrors.
Uh-huh, okay,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor.
It got so bad that one day Gary Busey, Mickey Rourke, and Andy Dick all showed up to do an intervention on me. I mean, that's saying something.
When those guys are showing up to tell you it's time to knock it off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, my will prevailed, and it ended up being like this 4-man, 5-day bender, and we were just doing massive amounts of blue. Remember blue?
Yeah. That was a real epidemic.
Sick stuff.
Yeah. It's gone. It seems to be gone now, but.
Yeah. Well, I think they use it for, I think that's what they're using over in North Korea for that rocket fuel to launch those missiles.
Is blue.
I think it is, yeah.
Huh. Okay. I did not know that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, after that, you know, I'm losing tons of money. I'm making these bad investments, these terrible business adventures. I got married and divorced 3 times over the course of like 3 or 4 years. I was so into these women as I was meeting them and falling in love with them. I got tattoos of all their names. I got tattoos of all my fiancé's names, or even more of those. I'll tell you, man, my arms looked like the on deck list backstage at Tattletale's Gentleman Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brandy, Crystal, Tawny, Sheila, like 7 different Nickies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, real bottoming out, huh?
Really bad. And, you know, imagine having to, like, I would do these movies, and I would have to wear, like, long-sleeve shirts in every scene. I was doing a couple beach movies, and I was wearing, like, these huge sweaters to hide these, because they couldn't cover with makeup at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
To hide
they even had to rename one of the films. It was called Beach Party. They had to change it to Sweater Party.
Uh-huh, because there was one guy wearing a sweater.
Yeah, and at that point I was so broke. I owed so many people so much money. I would do pretty much any film that would pay me half of what I was asking.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I gotta say, a lot of clunkers on your, on your IMDb page.
Some were decent.
Uh-huh. But there's a lot of them.
I know, but, alright, well, yeah, there were a lot, but I'll tell you, there were some that I thought were pretty good.
Like which ones?
Dingleberry and Myron, Stinkfingered was good, Shirtface's Revenge. What else? The Jazz Sitter. Remember that one?
The Jazz Sitter.
Yeah. Same as the Jazz Singer, but this guy's a professional babysitter instead of a cantor?
Yeah, okay. So So his family doesn't want him to be a babysitter?
Exactly, yeah.
Uh-huh. Like a jazz babysitter?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. He wears a jazz beanie.
Okay. Well, that's not a jazz beanie. That's a yarmulke, which is
In the film I wear a jazz beanie.
Oh, in the film. Oh, you wear like a Joe Zawinul, Neil Peart jazz beanie.
Kudos to you. You named both the names I was going to name.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm kind of up on the jazz beanie.
I like it. Whatever jazz do you like? Do you like, Toto?
That's a little too wild for me. Jazz Toto. I kind of can't follow it. I like stuff more like Return to Forever.
Ooh, yes.
Chick Corea. I like Spyro Gyra.
Ooh, how about the Manhattan Transfer?
I like that a lot. I like their more relaxing stuff.
I do too. Yeah, that's fair enough. But you surely you don't think that Oh God, You A-Hole was bad.
I don't think it's a great movie.
Okay. Well, how about the Crooked Edmund Hillary?
Okay. Yeah. That's the, yeah.
Debbie Dance?
Uh-huh.
How about My Brother the Birther?
Uh-huh.
That was good.
Those were, I guess.
Those were decent!
Yeah, alright, sure.
I'll tell you what wasn't great, though.
What's that?
I hope you didn't see it. I played Raymond Pettibon in that straight-to-DVD Black Flag biopic, Slogan Fuzz.
Uh-huh.
It was retitled Their Way in Singapore.
Okay.
Their war, I'm sorry.
Their war.
Yeah.
And, that was a really bad.
Not good.
No, it was, I just remember so many inaccuracies in it.
They made me draw my own pictures and I can't draw pictures.
Yeah. Well, I remember one part where Ron Reyes is on an iPhone.
Yes. That's true.
Just call. I forget who he was. I think he was trying to call Robo at that point.
He was, yes. And Robo was, at that point, he was at Guitar Center playing a set of drums that was about 40 years from being invented.
Yeah. So just a lot of inaccuracies.
Yeah.
Not great. I mean,
Henry Rollins was black. He was good, though. He's good. He had the shorts. And the shorts. He was a method actor too. That guy. All he wore was those shorts.
Mm-hmm.
All day on the set, even when he wasn't filming.
He just liked those shorts.
He did. Benicio del Toro played Chuck Dukowski. He was quite good.
Mm-hmm. He can surprise you like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you, Dougie, do you mind talking about, your run on The Apprentice?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear, yeah.
Well, obviously I would rather not, but it is all part of the healing process. And, you know, like they say, my therapist says there can be no secrets and nothing can go unaddressed if you want to heal. So, I'm an open book, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's like a healthy way of looking at all this stuff.
I'm trying. Unfortunately, when my obituary is written, that's going to be just as prominent as any of the success I had in stand-up or television or movies. So here goes. I will say this. Had I known that Donald Trump was one day going to be the president, I would have never kicked him in the face after he fired me for spending the money my team raised in the hot dog selling contest on hashish and pornography.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really paying the price for it now. I'll tell you that much.
How so?
Well, I'm under tight surveillance.
Really?
Yeah. I saw Devin Nunes looking in my bedroom window last night.
Really?
Yeah, he was creeping around. He was doing some night creeping. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you, he's the guy that you look at him and you think, oh, he's a day creeper. But he's a night creeper, too.
You know, some dudes just have, they can be just a 24-hour creep.
Right. What band does he look like he's a fan of? All right, you say yours and I'll say mine.
Okay. Okay. On the count of three?
Yes. One, two, three.
Seven Mary Three.
Who?
Seven Mary Three.
Ooh, they're both good. See, I always feel like he's at least 48, but he's probably much younger, so you're probably right.
Mm-hmm. I picture him getting pumped up listening to Cumbersome.
Oh, here we come. Cumbersome. Great album cover, regardless.
Very. Do you think they wrote a song they were just like, oh my god, this is the most cumbersome sounding song ever?
Hey, bro.
Or like, we need to call this song Cumbersome. Or do you think they're like, I'm going to write a song called Cumbersome. And then, so therefore it has to be the most cumbersome sounding song ever.
You know, I really can't go further with this because Jason is my landlord.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't realize you were tight with those guys.
I am, yeah, so let's...
Fair enough.
We could stop with that.
Sure, Dougie, absolutely.
I don't want to get evicted, right?
No, I wouldn't want you to get evicted over this either.
No.
Yeah, so you had a rough time with The Apprentice.
I did, yes. And so... Basically, you know, the Apprentice face kick and the Dancing with the Stars debacle really made me persona grata in the entire entertainment industry by around 2012 or so.
Sure. Well, yeah. I do just, to be fair, you danced to Gigi Allen's song, and I guess the best way to say this is, I kill everything I bleep. F is the first word there.
Make love to, yeah.
Yeah, sure, which, that's a bold choice.
It was, and I'll tell you, man, Ali Sheedy was dead against it. But I was so gacked up on Corral that I convinced her to go with it. You know how, like, when you're on coke, like, you've been on coke, you're so excited about it, about, like, whatever you're doing, and you can convince someone that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've been there.
Not really, no.
Okay, well, anyway, if you've seen the footage, you know how insane this thing was.
It's very outrageous.
I tore off her dress, I smeared her with fudge, and then I tore off my own clothes, revealing, of course, that infamous soiled jock strap and those weathered cowboy boots.
It's very upsetting.
Yeah. We got voted off right in the middle of the dance.
Which... It seemed like a pretty rare occurrence.
Never happened before, and as far as I know, it hasn't happened since. But, man, those judges were so mad. Two of them actually threw chairs at me. And, you know, I got so mad that I ended up kicking Len Goodman in the face.
Uh-huh.
And he's in his late 60s at that point, too, so that didn't endear me to anybody.
Yeah, and that was your move back then.
It was. It's just kicking people in the face. Yeah. So he sues me.
Uh-huh.
Ali Sheedy sues me.
Okay.
I even got sued by Molly Ringwald and Judd Nelson for reasons I'm still unsure of to this day.
But no idea. I guess I knew they were in a movie together.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
So you got sued by a lot of people.
I did. I lost everything, and, you know, that's pretty much what set me into the wilderness years.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I guess, can we get into the wilderness years, as you call them?
Well, there's not a lot to tell, you know, but I was essentially and literally living in the wilderness.
Yeah, literally.
I lived in a tent made from rotting garbage bags. I couldn't even afford clothes at that point. I was wearing a loincloth, which was actually made from the loins of this dead animal I found in a gully. I'm not sure if it was like a moose or a walrus or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's when I met my wife, and my godsend, Brianna. Yeah. She was a park ranger, and she found me on one of her rounds. It was quite, I don't know if you'd call that kismet or not, but she really took pity on me, and she offered me food and water, and she even gave me the shirt off her back.
Wow. She did?
She did. But, you know, that was mainly because we ended up making love on a hot boulder about an hour after we met. Yeah, I really turned on the old Dougie charm, and it worked.
Okay, all right.
But, you know, we've been inseparable ever since. And sure, it's a 25-year age difference, but I find it really works.
Uh-huh.
You know, and she really turned my life around, and she cured me of all my bad habits, she helped me get my finances in order. That was a big thing. You know, she's very smart like that. What else? Really helped me get my career back on track, and most importantly, she bore me three beautiful children, Skylar, Skylark, and Skylab.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are very inspired name choices.
They're great names. I think a child's name should show that the parent is very creative.
I don't know if that necessarily has to be the first goal with a child's name, but...
Oh, I do. I think it should be that. I think secondly, I think it should show that the parent has really cool taste in music.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. And what is the next goal? To show that the parent has enough money to kind of buffer the child from the real world?
Yes. Well, case in point, Baron Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go wrong with a name like that. It's like, oh, that guy's rich. That guy could be walking down the street in a burlap sack, and you'd say, what's that guy's name? His name's Baron. Oh.
Yeah. He
must be loaded.
It commands respect.
Yeah.
You know? So you really kind of did piece things back together.
I did. You know, and I'll tell you, Brianna has helped me co-create this new show, Second Chances.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good, and put a little plug. It premieres next Wednesday at 8 on the Shout Network. And did my assistant Julie send you a screener? I hope she did.
Yeah, yes, she did.
Did you get to watch it?
Yeah, I did. I did get to check it out.
You loved it, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, can I? I guess I would just say it's like I guess I would say the show's not completely up my alley.
Well, how so?
Well. I mean, I can tell people just to give them the episode I saw. It was like, it's like a very straight, well, look, the episode I saw it starts off in like a really typical sitcom family house, and you are trying to show your son on the show how to build a volcano for a science fair.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You can't relate to that.
Uh-huh. And you had no idea what you were doing.
Right. Most parents don't.
Yeah, and then you started arguing with the wife on the sitcom, who I do have to say is so much better looking than you. I thought she seemed like a model, and you don't. No offense, you don't.
Hey.
And so it was just a very unrealistic sitcom dynamic, and you and your wife are arguing about who could make the better Thanksgiving dinner.
Right.
And then there's a bet, and then you're going to make the turkey, and you said you're going to make the greatest turkey anyone's ever had. And then,
yes!
But then it's clear you have no idea what you're doing, which seems to be a recurring theme on the show.
Well, that's most fathers. That's most husbands.
Uh-huh.
We think we know what we're doing, then we really don't.
Yeah. Well, the big twist on the show is that you get the directions for making the turkey and making the science fair volcano mixed up.
I'm laughing just hearing you talk about it.
Uh-huh. And then you're like looking at your phone, sneakily looking at your phone, reading from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But you're looking at the wrong pages for each occurrence, and you're acting like a total expert. And then you're building the volcano with your son.
Right.
And then you're putting like stuffing and stuff into the volcano.
It's hilarious.
And then in the for the turkey, you are putting like all these chemicals into it, and like rocket fuel.
Yes.
And things like that. And then the big science fair happens. And then, your son presses.
You're laughing.
I'm laughing at you laughing. Your son presses the button and it gets, then the volcano starts like erupting cranberry sauce. And then you go home and he has a ribbon for whatever he won or whatever. And then it's Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. And then the turkey, you set the turkey on the table. And then as you go to carve into it, it explodes against the wall. And then I remember the final thing was you had to pay your wife the money. And then you're like looking right into the camera as you're putting the money into her hand and you like shrug.
And then I say my candid catchphrase. What's that called when you say the first letter of something wrong? Like you interchange them.
When you say the first letter of something wrong?
I meant to say my patented catchphrase, but it came out my candid catchphrase.
I don't know if there's a name
gotta be a term for that,
but I don't know. I don't
Anywho, know. I turn to the camera and I say my patented catchphrase. I thought it would work.
Yeah. I thought it would work, and then...
Well, okay, if you didn't like that scene, surely you lost your S when I said, I want to drink Ivanka Trump's blood, when I was dressed as Dracula in that Hollywood party, Halloween party scene flashback. Do you like that?
No, that's, I thought it was corny.
I'm corny.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's okay. Not everything is for everybody. And, you know, that's what makes the tapestry of life, I think, so rich and so bountiful. Wouldn't you say it's bountiful?
That life is rich and bountiful?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. And, look, I'm sure my show will find a big audience. And, you know, I should actually get rolling soon. So I want to say namaste to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, look, Doug, I mean, I certainly wish you the best of luck on the show. And you deserve any and all the success you can get, because you certainly went through hell to get to where you're at, and it seems like you came out a much better man, I would say.
Well, thank you, Todd. You know, I had to go through all that stuff that we talked about to get to this place of real deep peace that I'm at right now, and I can't tell you how good it feels to have no more skeletons in my closet. You know, I've made amends to everybody. For the record, I did apologize to Peyton Reed, and I do reparations by coming over to his house once a month and polishing his superhero bobbleheads. So that's,
well, that works.
That's taken care of.
Sure. Well, Doug, I do have to say, it's a real thrill getting to talk to you about your life and career, and you're a real role model for all of us. So, yeah, it's a real thrill.
Well, thank you. You know, it was a pleasure to meet you and get to speak with you tonight. It was really fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I can say, I don't know if you, I doubt you'd remember this, and I didn't want to bring it up at the beginning of the conversation, because we actually did meet back in 2004.
We did?
Yeah, and you were at it was Irving Plaza in New York City, and you were doing like an unannounced guest set at a David Cross show. And afterwards, you took the time to talk to me about auditioning at SNL.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that night. Yes. I remember it mainly because that was the night the Yankees clinched the pennant race, and I was so excited for them because I'm such a fan. Mm-hmm. And also, that was the night of my first kill. And did you end up auditioning for SNL or not?
Yeah. Well, you know, that was a different kind of. It was my career was going in a bunch of different directions, and okay. Can I just ask? You said that was. Did you say your first kill?
Yeah. Why?
But, I mean, you must have killed plenty of times before. You were already, like, a really well-established stand-up by that point.
Oh, I don't mean killing an audience. I meant killing a person.
Wait. Hold on. What do you mean by killing a person?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
I'll never forget his name either. It was Mike Maloney, and he was the maintenance guy at the Park West Suites where I was staying that night. And I made it look like he fell down the stairs and cracked his head open. It was very messy, I gotta say, but my technique really got better as the years went on, and I got way more of them under my belt. Oh.
Wait, is this a joke?
No, why?
Well, first of all, it's horrifying. There's nothing about any of this in your book at all.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't think it added anything to my story, really. And, you know, besides, the statute of limitations on that stuff is, what, like 5 years? So, and I haven't killed since, well, gosh, January of 2012. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm in the clear.
Uh-huh. Well, I got to just say, for the statute of limitations for murder, that is not accurate at all.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm positive. Yeah, it does not expire like that.
Oh, great. Oh, good. My agent just texted, and he's dropping me. Oh, okay, and there's one from my wife. Oh, and I never guess this. She's leaving me, and she's taking the kids. Oh, good. Okay, and there's my publisher telling me that the book's not coming out next week. You think this can't get any worse, but my dog just texted, and he said I'm no longer his master. Great. Oh, great, and there's the police.
Okay.
Great.
Well, Dougie... Dougie?
Oh, great. Oh, and there's Donald Trump in the front yard. Great.
Hey, Dougie.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no. He's taken off that overcoat that he never takes off that he's had on since January. He's going to smother me in it with that extra, extra long tie. I'm sorry I kicked you in the face. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Hey, Dougie. Oh, okay. Hello? 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 Huh. Okay. Well, I guess that's, well, it was exciting. We just had, the Dougie Miller. Thanks again for listening to Best Show Best. Much thanks to Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Martine Sellis, Brendan McDonald, AP Mike, of course, John Worster, who else? Marcia Neumeier, and yeah, you, the Best Show listener. Thank you. And if you like this, check out the full show every Tuesday night from 9 p.m. to midnight at thebestshow.net, and support The Best Show, patreon.com/thebestshow. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.